Good morning and welcome back to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Mike DiCarlo.
Good morning, Mike DiCarlo. Good morning, Seth Bauer.
Good morning, Tommy Puglia.
Call me Rocky.
That was like the most awkward intro ever. All right. Anyways, jumping on in. Welcome, everyone, back to the Explicit Measures Podcast. Today, our main topic is going to be talking about an article from Nightingale Devs. I think that's how you would say that. Internal design, success requires form and function is the name of the article, topic of the article for today. But before we do that, let's do some news. Anything that has come out recently or any news articles here that we want to open up with here?
There was a new Gateway post last week.
Yeah, that's
cool. With literally zero detail in it. There's an update, so it.
Check it out, maybe.
Go grab it.
Microsoft.
Here's the Fabric hack that we should have done.
That brings me up to a point here. Have you had a chance to use the new? There's like a managed connections and gateway experience now. It's very different.
We've talked about this.
Have you been using it really recently? Like,
the
have
only
you been?
Experience.
What was that?
Yeah. See, we talked about this. That you were like, "Oh, this is new." And it's like, no, it's been out for years.
Yes, but I feel like it's new because, so let me say it this way. I think there's some, it maybe has been out for a while, but I think now that they've kind of really shifted away from, you know, the gateway and then connections, it's kind of like becoming one experience a bit. And it makes more sense, I think, when you start looking at like pipelines and data flows Gen 2 and like all the things in Fabric. It's not quite refined yet, but I am liking the idea or the experience of I just create a connection first, and then in the service, we can then share that connection with other users. I'm actually really liking the shared experience on the same connection. Does that make sense?
Are you talking about the experience if I'm going to create like a new data flow, I choose connections, like here's your already saved connections from that dropdown?
Yes, it kind of integrates with that drop-down menu, but it doesn't always pick up all the connections that are saved previously. Right. Yeah. But it changes the experience a little bit when you are connecting like with multiple users to the same connection. So you can say, okay, so Tommy, you're going to log into Google Analytics. Right. That's the permissions we're going to use to go access the data at Google level. Now you can give delegated permissions to like Seth, who can use that same connection to go get access to that data, but then he can then load it into a data flow or whatever he needs to. So you can now have multiple people manage that connection, even though it's using like an identity of someone who set it up, which I'm getting more used to that experience now. And I actually feel like I'm liking it a little bit more now. Anyways, that was just my kind of comment around, it feels like Microsoft's trying to move you a bit more away from the gateways of things. And they're trying to give you more like, more direct connections. There's a whole bunch of virtual networks that are showing up. And so you can now provide those as direct access to your company as opposed to having to install gateways. I think Microsoft's trying to give you alternatives to just having to spin up gateways everywhere.
Well, it's not just the on-premise gateway too that's radically changing. They also have the VNet gateway. So they're understanding too that we're moving away and more organizations are moving away from cloud or from on-premise.
I would agree with that.
So the VNet gateway available in the Power platform and available in Power BI now, still limited, still not necessarily, I think, ready for prime time, but they want to make that available to as many users and as many organizations as possible.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's going to be an easier, less friction-based path to access data.
Man.
I think it's heading in the right direction. Anyways, any other openers or other topics here?
No, that just makes me think. Do you remember the early stages of Power BI? We had ODBC.
No, it was too long ago.
Too long ago?
You could only connect to like Excel files.
Well, the old on-premise gateway maybe worked on a virtual computer or a virtual machine, but we had a dedicated PC at our office that had the gateway on
it. No way.
No, you didn't.
We did. Early stages.
That is early stages.
Then there was they changed the name of it. It was Personal Gateway and Enterprise Gateway. There was like, two of them.
Yeah.
And so you had to like pick one. And now it's just like the gateway, and then you have a personal one.
The amount of knowledge I have about connection strings in ODBC that I don't need anymore.
the amount of wasted information. That's a lot of extra space that I just need to keep. Yeah. All right. The only other thing I have here for announcements is the Microsoft Fabric Conference is coming up. It's about a week away. It is found at azuredataconf.com. It runs from March 26th to the 28th. If you want to go to a pre-con, you can go to a pre-con the 24th and 25th, and there's a post-con the 29th. So go check it out. If you want $100 off your ticket to go to that conference, use Carlo100 for $100 off your tickets. Excellent. And with that, jump into our main topic. Tommy, you found this article. Give us a quick starting point here and where you think we should go with this.
So we're diving into an article by Christopher Lambathieu, or maybe someone else can help me help with the pronunciation, a little French here. Not that he's French, but French last name. And we're diving into the intricacy of implementing DataViz projects within organizations. And there's a balance between aesthetic designs from the form and the utility. And I think a big part of this article that I'm going to dive into and really excited about is we've always talked about training around DataViz for the authors and for the people building, but we haven't really talked about the data literacy training as a actual component of implementation. And there's a big part of this article is Christopher really pushing towards, we need to do adequate training and we need to build up literacy before we can develop or produce any innovations around data visualization at organizations.
So what do you want to kind of discuss here? Like what's the,
So that's the outline of the article. And
okay.
I felt this was a game changer article for me, and I'm going to dive right in because one of the first things is he's an information designer. Cool name. Never heard of that before. And I wonder if that's something that's going to be part of what we do, but all the years that we've talked about this on the podcast, we've done user groups, my own training. When I do data visualization training, it's always around the data analysts, the people who are going to be building Power BI. We do training for consumers, but it's not data viz training. It's how to use Power BI, drill through.
Not very mechanical in nature, like how to make the technology do what you want, correct?
Right. But we've never said, hey, one of our implementations or one of the goals that we need to do is build up the literacy of data visualization throughout the organization, throughout departments. I've always assumed everyone knows how to build a bar chart or knows what a bar chart is. Everyone can look at the standard visuals and they can understand them. And this very much, the article goes in the face of that of no. You need to make sure before you roll out your tool or your innovation of choice, ours Power BI, obviously, that you need to ensure that you've done the proper training and the skill buildup of data literacy for your organization as a whole.
This is interesting because we're talking a lot of, again, we're gonna go back into the people portion of this and what do they know. And in the article, it kind of outlines three, you know, I guess, how would I call it? He goes through the article and he says, hey, look, I worked at a place that did a lot of data visualization work. We had to start through this project. And in doing that project, I had to build three kind of, was it life lesson one, life lesson two? He's got another life lesson three. Okay, there's three main life lessons he's kind of using here. Like, hey, these are things that we learned inside the context of this really large data visualization project for like the state of Missouri. And so he starts with saying, you need to build literacy around data. You need to focus on the project and alignment of the project. Then his last point here is you need to understand your internal and external audience. Who are you building this stuff for? So I think these are great three principles. And I think what you're talking to or you're speaking to initially here, Tommy, is the literacy part, right? Do we have people who, one, can click the buttons? That's a different, not skill. That is a part of the skills, right? And then there is, when we show this to you, are you able to interpret the information on it? Is that kind of where you're going with this?
1,000%.
Any comments,
Seth? Well, that's good. It's good. We have alignment that the article in three bullets is where we're going with this conversation.
Just trying to figure out what we're doing
here. No, it's good.
I'm lost.
I do agree with I think I have at least a good placeholder, which kind of flies in the face. Tommy, I'm on the same page as you now.
Okay.
To some degree.
Well,
so if we're talking about the how you're engaging with a business around visualization, the push that you have, Tommy, around always assuming everyone knows what we're talking about, I think is the trap here. Because and the reason I'm going to hang there a little bit and agree with you is in more recent experience, right? the conversations that you have are coming from a place that, whether you like to or not, coming from a place of a lot of knowledge around data, and the fact that the vast majority of people have seen a line chart and a bar chart and, you know, a pie charts, all the things before. But I think we do launch too quickly sometimes into making the assumptions around all of the work behind the scenes that produces that simple visualization. So when we start talking about simple visualizations, and I think it's a little bit different for the writer here, because an information designer, like, they are spending an inordinate amount of time to create an experience or a visualization, right? Whereas in the vast majority of our reporting, I think a lot of it is potentially exploratory. Power BI is much more, it's interactive. I don't know if the example he gives is that Tableau dashboard, but I think it falls in that spectrum of where we're talking about that form and function, right? Which is part of, you know, what he's laying out here. And I've found some things online, right, like in that spectrum where, you know, when we're talking about function, is it, you know, explanatory? Are we trying to explain something, or is it more exploratory? Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that a lot in terms of, like, what is the best mode of, like, delivering information. And then you're talking about form from a static to interactive as well. So we have this, like, Power BI is by nature, I think, obviously more interactive. So we're trying to create these experiences, which we've often called web pages. And if you think about what goes into web design, program management, project management, UI, UX, like tons and tons of conversation around creating a user interface for end users to effectively do something or effectively get information. And if we're looking at what we build just in a singular way, right? Whether he's building a single visual or reporting experience, the breadth of work for some of the reports that we generate, are we skipping ahead? Are we zooming through a lot of these, you know, steps in the process to create an issue, an underlying issue that might be being, like, kind of sussed out in this article, which is are we predicating a lot of that discussion on assumptions, because we assume people know the data parts, the literacy of visualization, et cetera.
Mike, and if you allow, let me lean in, because you said you were kind of thrown off a little at the beginning on that, like, what in a sense is kind of causing, we'll call maybe a little confusion. Are you saying that you think a lot of organizations already have pretty good data literacy? That's not the issue.
Because No, I think quite the opposite. I don't think organizations have spent a lot of time. So I feel like data literacy kind of gets naturally drawn out from other people experiencing various visuals and tables. And I think this is maybe part of the reason why a lot of people just expect to go to Excel, dump out some data, and then just start playing with it. I've even seen a very wide range of experience around people who even know how to use pivot tables versus not pivot tables. We still have people in Excel that are still just doing data, looking at tables of things and doing aggregations of things, but no one's using pivot tables yet. So there's already some, I think, some very broad knowledge gaps across the organization just at that level. So to say we can elaborate and provide really rich graphical visualizations that are actually describing what we should be doing, what actions should be taking, I don't think organizations spend enough money or time to train, educate, and spend real effort around making sure everyone understands the language of data. So like,
yeah,
one example, I'll go back to this, we've talked about this a lot, is the IBCS standards, right? So I think that is a great place to start and just say, hey, everyone, this is, we're going to set up some standards on how we want to see reporting conveyed. And again, I think this comes down from a leadership level, right? Leadership has to say, this is what I want to see. If I'm looking at a report, we can all assume that this is a consistent way to look at information. You know, here's where we are. Here's where we are right now. Here's my position. Here's my direction. Here's where I'm going. And so I think that IBCS standard, yes, it's not as flashy. It may not have all the company colors. It's really designed to convey information about data. And I think we've talked about this in the past where, when we are building visualizations, when we are building things for teams, we're just communicating to someone else our ideas about the information, but using it in a graphical way. That's what we're trying to accomplish. So as the, you know, I don't know how to say this one, but if someone else can't interpret your visual, is it the error of the one creating it, or is it the error of the one reading it? And I would say the error would fall on the side of the one creating the visual. They didn't do a good enough job understanding their audience or distilling it down in a way that the consumer of that information can read it. I think this is a lot of time that happens also with just regular communicating and talking on projects and teams, right? I'll say one thing, you'll hear it, Tommy, and you'll be like, okay, I got it. And then I'll be like, well, tell me back what you heard. And you tell me back what you heard, and it's totally different. Like, I mean, this happens all the time across many different projects. You have to have more clearly conveying of information back and forth. And this is why, again, one of the things I like to do in consulting engagements is I like to talk, but at the same time, I like to draw out wireframes and diagrams and little block, you know, just to make sure we're on the same page. Like, hey, you said this starts here and it's going to go here and the data moves from this way to this way. So having that visualization in front of me really helps convey, I think, the message of how we're going back and forth between that information transfer.
I think there's an argument here, and what I took out of this article is we're talking about that, Mike, you're talking about it, is when the engine's already running, we already have reports, we already have visualizations.
I'm saying this is all pre-work. This is all work. This is all work the company needs to invest in to educate their team so they all are talking about the same language, right?
Yeah.
The company should be saying, we will communicate things, or, you know, here's my leadership reports. I want this done in IBCS standards. This is what I want. Like, someone needs to say, this is what we're going to do. We'll all educate ourselves. We'll spend time. We'll all get on the same page on how we visually communicate things. Great. Now we all can have the same kind of conversation, because now we have the same base understanding of what, when I give you this kind of chart and highlight these things on there, that now makes sense to you. So I think it shortcuts a lot of that extra added communication that's needed there. So this is pre-baked solutions.
Your description shortcuts it, because it's from the top down. Like, which is a valid scenario, but not always. Like, he actually outlines, and you can tell in his structure, he's the one pushing from the bottom.
Oh, I would agree with that. I'm just saying.
And that's a much harder road to pass. Because, and I think where
I
even a paragraph given kind of around like the conversation of what are we trying to do and how does it align to objectives kind of thing. Like, and then you're dealing with leaders also speaks to an organization that doesn't have solid objectives, because that shouldn't be like, when you get leadership in, leadership should be saying, okay, I'm glad you guys are working. If we're saying this is a solution to this objective, I'm on board. How does that align? What do we need to do? As opposed to determining whether or not this is the objective. Are we meeting that objective? So there should be skin in the game from leadership to define what it is, the problem that we're solving, or like on a high level. And then the group underneath can fill in the details, but we should all have alignment. And if you don't, then yes, this is exactly the problem you're going to come into, where you're going to have long, many meetings as groups up and down the chain trying to solve and make sure that what is being built is actually going to be useful for the business.
Well, let me take this one step further, because there should be a few keywords here that should be a little familiar. This is from the article. Without strategic alignment, sound familiar? Innovation may not feel like a fit and the project rightly shuts down. Without activity alignment, innovation may be well known yet still struggle to be used. Think about where strategic alignment, we've talked about this. This is from our implementation planning. We did a 10 episode series on strategic and implementation. Yet, not one time in our 10 hours of conversation on implementation was one of the goals or one of the big strategic initiatives, data literacy, as one of the forefronts of an organization. We talked about technology. We talked about getting the resources, the data analyst, but not one point did we ever talk about literacy as a skill for the organization before we begin or as one of the main goals. It's
because you don't lead with data literacy. Like the data, like data literacy and data culture, like maybe unless you're saying hyperscoped pockets, right, or part of a particular process that we're doing, like I would almost argue, like I wonder whether or not the organizations themselves that he's part of and building build these visualizations. If the whole org is doing that thing, then yes, that like still you're raising the literacy of individuals throughout that org. So like the byproduct of the adoption of reporting and tools, I'd be shocked. I'd have to go look back like a data culture and all of the different areas within there are a byproduct of all of the work that you're putting in to raise the data literacy and like create a better data culture.
I see. Like, I want to argue. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I feel like I'm gonna take the other side here.
So maybe I think there's two parts to this. I've always thought of data literacy as a very broad scope thing within an organization. Can I walk into an area and, you know, can we be on the same page? And you're suggesting that as we engage in more hyper-focused pockets, that has to be part of the conversation up front in terms of training people and raising the bar of like generalized understanding between both groups. And I don't disagree with that. So it's an interesting point. Like, to reiterate, the reason I don't disagree with it is like, even in your own engagements, describe the scenario, the different scenarios between an engagement that goes pretty well versus the ones that are just amazing.
Yeah. So there's a huge
what is the difference?
I think it's people who understand and organizations who understand either the need for the business intelligence, the data visualization, or they already have context on what they want to manifest, what they want to show.
Exactly. Exactly. So I agree with you in that standpoint, because if you take the difference between a so-so implementation or engagement, it's the one where you're bringing everything. It's a one-sided conversation where everybody's like, yep, we need it. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right.
The best ones are where you have a subject matter expert or someone who has experience with seeing and operating and building things and having reporting as part of that, and can articulate what the specific needs are or what the drivers are for you to plug in and support. So how do you get the so-so experience to a top level one? And I guess there's an argument here. You're still doing all the training. It's still one-sided. If they don't have that experience, they're not going to be able to bring it, even if you tell them about it.
Right. Right. And I think that's a huge part of what I'm saying. When you think of the simple scenarios or the scenarios where we bring Power BI to an organization, we get the data analysts and the resources, then there's that initial moment of frustration or people not using it. So now we're almost playing from behind to get people on board on using Power BI. Then we go into adoption. Whereas to me, in this article, there's an argument to be made to a brief point that you said, Seth, is let's do training and build up the literacy before we actually launch our Power BI, or before we actually launch reporting as a whole at the organization. That do have we ensured that there's alignment around departments, around not just being able to look at a bar chart, but what they're going to be measuring? Do organizations understand and can speak to it before we even launch Power BI? It should that be one of the main initiatives to say that we're ready to have a business intelligence platform at our organization. I like the sound of that. Now, that being said, in reality, that's a harder sell. There's a lot of subjective areas there, but I think it would be hard. But when you think about if you were to do it that way in this idealistic scenario, man, you are setting yourself up for amazing success and probably rapid growth in the long term.
In what ways?
Okay. So again, let's go back to the first scenario that normally occurs. We want Power BI, or executive says we want Power BI, top down. We get reports, but people still either are unsure of what they're measuring, oh, just show me sales or marketing, or they still have the low data literacy. They're low on the adoption curve. So now we're building and we're focusing our time on building people up while we're still trying to build reports. So you're still, there's a lot of, I feel like, needed work, but we call it work because that's what we're used to, compared to the scenario where we spend time in the beginning workshopping, getting people aligned on what are you going to measure, how are you going to look at it, what do you do now, and ensuring that before we launch our first report that everyone is aligned on their objectives, but how they're going to look at it, they can interact with their data, and they can speak to what they need, that they have that skill as a consumer base, not from a data analyst base. All of a sudden, now you are ahead of the game when you first launch. When people start asking for reports, you're not dealing with Wild West or random requests that now we have to filter out. You have people aligned on who the stakeholders are and what they're asking for. And this is that first launch, but now the next 6 months, I feel like you are way ahead of the game compared to someone who, what we consider work now or our normal adoption, is really playing catch up.
Okay. So the challenge back I would have is in current engagements, if an organization comes in and says, we hear this great stuff about Power BI. We need business intelligence in our organization. We would like you to come in and teach our users how to use this tool. What I hear you saying is, before we start teaching people about the tool, we need to teach them how to think about their own business area.
1,000%.
The thing that I struggle with there is are we suggesting that the entirety of that business unit is people that just do what they're told?
I disagree with your point there, Tommy, that like the business unit doesn't know how to do their job. Like they've been doing it. They wouldn't exist if they didn't know how to do their job or be able to get some way around the data. Whether or not you agree with it as a central BI team, I think is irrelevant in this conversation. They're asking for technical help around their area. And I don't, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt Seth, but I think I'm aligning with your direction there on this, because this point there, Seth, a little bit.
No, and it's fine. It's just that is a much, like the difference between engagement, like great engagements and not great, are people who know their business. And I think you're going to struggle mightily as the business intelligence person to try to teach them about their own business. Like you can teach them some data concepts that are going to help them digest what it is you're building if that's what they're struggling with. But I think that is the byproduct of the report engagement when you're walking through things. But once again, those conversations are significantly different. right? If you come in your engagement and you're saying, okay, we have data sources. Here's our goal. The goal is we're going to get clarity around, you know, how many sales are happening
sales funnel,
in like region, in these regions. And it's really important for the organization to see how that, what that funnel looks like. That's the goal. Okay. Where does that data come from? Okay. Where, like, here are the things that we need to do when you're engaging with that data. What is the business like? Like, you're walking them through the steps of data, right? Here are the things we have to do to go get to this point. Like, it, questions they have to ask themselves that you need answers, requirements, right? Like the gathering of all of the things. This is the dialogue. Where this dialogue works is where somebody can articulate to you what exactly it is that they want, or when you're asking questions, give you the specifics about that. There's a huge difference between someone who understands their business area versus just works in it when you engage there, because if they don't get it well, that sounds right. Well, what we do is we, you know, let's look at this report. This one does this and this and this, versus somebody comes, oh, well, we got to do this. We got to do this, 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 this. And this is why, Tommy, we're going to do that. And let me tell you how you need to change your data to make sure that what's being represented is accurate. Like, you're not going to train that. You can't get that person who can't articulate that in a specific business area to be able to articulate those things. You're not the person to do that.
And I'll concede that, but I want to lean what you just said. I'm going to lean on when it comes to the functionality side of it. Can we teach, and this is a question for the both of you, can you teach to consumers the ability to ask for the function? Or to your point, I want a draw through. I want that ability to look at my data the X, Y, and Z way. Can we teach that, the ability to speak to that?
Sure.
So listening on that.
So if we lean into that area, which is, I think, a lot more where this article delves, which is walking them through this process, but it's a walkthrough. It's not like I'm going to train you on all the different ways we can do this, because creatively speaking, I think objectively, these are two different kinds of projects and engagements, especially around the fact that business wants fast results. So great. I think rather than say, I'm going to adopt this whole strategy and just teach them how to do this before I give them anything, I'm going to say my process takes a little longer, because I'm going to interject a day in here where I'm taking the opportunity while we're creating value for the business with a report output.
I like this.
That I'm going to teach these people this skill set that will speed up this process in the future. Because that I do agree with. If everybody starts thinking about building the requirements for what the outcome is going to be, then you get better stuff. People are going to be like, hey, in the last time when we did this creative exercise where we have this question, you showed us four different visuals and the different ways we could interact with this on the page. And we chose this one. I think in this way, Tommy, right? I think this one we should do this way because of this and this and this reason, right? That I agree with, because then you're kind of iteratively engage, like showing people what our process is to get from us talking about data and us collecting requirements and delivering a report. Now, like, can I say we kind of talked about this in that process? Yeah, maybe, right? I think what you're saying is it's like this highlights that you should be very specific about that part of the engagement where you're brainstorming and you're saying, like, you're introducing different ways they could look at the data as opposed to just knowing or saying, "God, this is a bar chart."
Yeah. Yeah. And this is the highway I was going off. I might've gone off an exit there, but this is the intention I was trying to say. The basic tenets that we know from story framing and storytelling and data, I want to see, I'm looking at X grouped by Y filtered by Z. The basic tenets of how we do normal data visualization teaching that almost language to users and to the consumers on this is how we think. This is how we translate the data. So when we have these conversations, can we teach that rather than us going to them, go, look, we have this visual and you can click on this and then it does a drill through and they go, great. Well, what else can I do with it? That's fine. Rather, we have that part of the initiative up front, teaching the language of storytelling through DataViz, because we've always focused that on the
analyst. But here's my point, right?
Okay.
And you're bouncing in your argument. Okay. Your argument here is almost that it was like this approach, and you just landed there again, should be way out in adoption strategy land. And it shouldn't. It's part of the way down granular part of the process, because even if you start whipping this out on a high level, okay, I'm going to teach 100 users and like I'm going to say, here's this iterative process and this is what we're going to walk through. They're going to be like, whew, because it means nothing to them. The only like data, your point about data literacy has to be tied specifically to something that they care about.
I would agree.
And they only care about it when you're solving that problem in the particular process to solve a problem. So this reinforces my argument from the standpoint that as you iteratively go through this and lean in, and I agree, make a pointed effort to lean in these moments, data literacy is something that incrementally grows over time because you're giving them the opportunity to say, I kind of know my business area, but now I'm really thinking about it in a different way that's going to make an impact, not just on my work, but on how I can engage in building something that's scalable for the organization, for my team, et cetera, et cetera. Bring it on back. Disagree.
There's a gaping hole here. And the idea is, so
there, the same time. If there is no desire, you can't teach to it.
No,
I mean, that's the simple. I mean, what I'm hearing Seth say is if there is no desire to want to improve, the answers will be, I have no time. I don't want to learn this. Just give me my report and let me move on.
Yeah. And fine. So, which is also what he talks about.
Yeah.
In terms of like lack of engagement from audience of going through all this massive effort.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I think you make a really good point there. And I want to kind of maybe dovetail maybe my experience on that point as well, right? So I feel like I've had some really good experiences around when there are two kinds of users that come to you with needs for Power BI report help. And I'm going to try, this is probably an overgeneralization, but I'm just going to do the best I can with the analogy here, is I feel like there's an opportunity where we have potentially like two kinds of needs for data. There's one where is I'm solving a very specific problem. I have coming to you with my Excel sheet. I go to this thing. I show you my process. I'm going to go export this data. I'm going to make this table. I'm going to transform this data this way. And I'm going to make this output. This is what I do every week. And then I report out on what the results are. So it's a very, it's not necessarily like a really big strategic direction. It's I'm solving a pain point that I have right now. And this is how I've solved that pain point. So I would maybe, for lack of a better term, call that a short-term solution to solve something, right? That's one part of the world here. And then I see there's another realm of this that's more like long-term solutioning. And so when I see long-term solutioning, is this is talking more about, hey, we need this. Our team is going to regularly review our sales report. Our team is regularly going to review our, what's the survey results that people come through? Like there's like the, it's a special term. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Microsoft does it all the time. Yeah. It's the customer satisfaction report.
Satisfaction rating, yeah.
NPS score, right?
Yeah.
So someone's going to say, look, NPS score is a, to your point, Seth, this is a strategic goal of the company. We want an NPS score of above this. So we're going to say, we're going to set a standard and we're going to then report out on it every week or every month and say, how are we doing to that? Did something go wrong? Did we miss the mark on something? And how do we correct it? Because we're looking at the data and it shows something. So again, those are more to your point, Tommy. I think a lot of what you speak to is like those longer term, bigger objectives. You know, let's define the main KPI at the organization level and say, what do we care about? And then we trickle that down to what you're saying is in that business unit, let's focus on that item. So I do agree that needs to be there. when I think about those two areas of focus on data, I feel like there's another realm here. We have inexperienced users and we have more experienced users. The inexperienced users do things like, I'm going to have a whole bunch of slicers all over the page and there's this little tiny table on the bottom right-hand corner of what I want. Like, that to me seems like inexperienced. I'm just trying to make a fancy data dump tool where I get the data out. There's probably lots of visuals on one page, right? It's crammed in there. You're like, I really can't see anything that's going on here. I'm just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. And, you know, there's potentially lots of really large tables. This is where they're like, my report's slow. And we've got 30 columns of text fields all the way across this table. And it just scrolls and scrolls and scrolls forever. Then I see another realm of this where we start, okay, people who have gone through that stage and said, okay, this only added so much value. I was able to get value out of it, but not as much as I wanted. Then I think you move into more of this experienced realm where we start talking about, okay, we're going to use more different features of the tool, like the filter pane. And here's why, here's my reasoning why I would want to use the filter pane for these various reasons. You start strategically selecting visuals. You start having like a page navigation. Look, this sounds like we need an overview. And then here's the details. And like, we have multiple areas of details. You know, here's my MPS table. Here's my MPS by region. Here's my MPS by person. Like, you start breaking things down in a more, you know, granular way so people can kind of do a choose your own journey a little bit inside the report. So you're focusing more on drill through. You're crafting more of a story. You're thinking through the journey through the data to get people to the answers that they want. So to me, that's how I feel like there's two layers we're talking about here. And my experience has been, you start solving the short-term problems now, you gain trust, and you start enabling the ability to build that data culture, to Seth's point, around, okay, now that you and I are on the same page, I've been able to solve your short-term, super, you know, complicated problem, and we're now automating loads and getting, everyone's like, wow, that helped. I liked this. This was better than I was doing before. And so with that comes a renewed, experience, or they're more willing to listen to you to say, okay, let's take it a bit further here. Let's start talking about user journey, UI, UX. Let's talk about, are we even using the right visuals? Let's not use big tables. Let's focus on what's really adding value and action to your daily workflow. So I feel like, to me, that's my experience. We start small, we gain trust, and we build bigger.
And I really like that. And a quick side note, if I didn't get to argue about stuff like this, I would die. I would die. If I didn't get the opportunity to have these conversations and debate this, I would perish. I really like the two levels, because that second scenario, that's a very healthy data culture.
I would agree.
Right.
But I don't think you get there overnight. And to your point, like, I feel like I think your arguments are 100% valid, Tommy. Like, yes, we do need training. Yes, we do need to get people on board. We do need to, you know, push people a bit to be educated in this space. But what I feel like is, not every user is there yet. Not every user has bought into the value that you are saying that's going to get there. So we're going to maybe spend a little bit more time with those users, just handling some of the small short-term problems. And then once we'd solve those things, potentially we have the opportunity to get their ear to start doing more of these bigger initiatives and growing that.
Yeah. And see, we're potentially, I don't align with the article, is no organization is going to take weeks or months. Well, not any business I work in is going to take business
weeks or months. Yeah.
And to me, that still speaks of somebody talking at people and not resonating, because, perfect example, I'm going to teach a bunch of people something. I'm going to go to a conference and I'm going to have a session on how to teach people how to do something. What are the types of questions you predominantly get after those sessions, or anytime you're talking for a length of time?
Where can I get the slides?
that's one. That's one. What's the second one?
The most frustrating question in the world.
What are the second type of questions?
Is this recorded?
I have this specific problem I want you to solve.
That's true.
Because what they're trying to take is the technical, right, thing that you're talking about, or the way to do, and apply it to the thing that they're on the hook to deliver.
Yes. Yes. That's a very true. Yep.
And,
I agree.
And why I don't like the preach it and then they all get on board kind of thing And where iteration helps is when it's embedded in the iteration, you're doing what he points out later on around the innovative pieces, where he says in bold, teammates are much more likely to use innovation if it addresses activities they undertake every day.
I like that.
My argument would be yes, and also in the basics, things that they don't understand. So if you're coming in and you're training people how to leverage a tool that includes how to view data in visual form, the best way to do that is in that iterative process while you're solving something for them, because then it resonates, then it sticks with them.
I like that point a lot.
And over time, are you going to engage in that process and be like, hey guys, there's this brand new visualization and there's 10 columns that we have to throw into it and we're going to modify these 500 properties and it's going to be amazing? No.
You don't do that?
But after a couple iterations with the same team, after you've got them thinking, then you can start to poke. Then you can start to bring about all of the additional things because you're building a foundation for them. You can't build a foundation of data literacy throughout an organization by talking at people. They're not going to engage unless you make it meaningful for them. And that is the only way I've ever seen it happen, is when we're walking along with them and engaging them in that step-by-step process, because that's a learning curve. That's not I'm going to take this monumental leap into understanding my business area.
So there's two sides to data literacy: knowing your data and knowing how to read data. My one fear, my last devil's advocate side here, where I would say this could be very idealistic, but could be very powerful, is if I'm dealing with an organization who has a very, I'm going to lean in here too, just to try to get a little more argument juice. Yeah. So yeah, maybe it may help. I mean, it works for you, so maybe it helps. So if you're dealing with an organization, we'll go with the assumption that your data culture is, we'll say, low, is poor. The data literacy is already low, how they measure everything. And we've talked about this a ton. So this is not like the rare case at organizations where they have a hard time or the easy time understanding their data. We know this is a hard issue we also have to work with. If at the same time, I'm trying to get them to accept and feel comfortable with their data, and at the same time, I have to try to train them and teach them about the components we're talking about. To me, that's a lot more, that's a lot of overflow for them of being overwhelmed. And that's my one argument towards, if I'm trying to teach them not just their data, but now we're also trying to teach them the components of reading data, what are they focused on? They're going to be so focused on their own data that they're going to lose sight. They don't care about the function. They're going to be so focused on their data. Now, if their data is already great and they have the healthy data culture, yeah, great. The function works. We can teach the function. But you can't teach both at the same time. You can't work on both at the same time and expect both of them to be fruitful. That's my argument.
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
All right.
Like,
end of
That's fine.
The visualization aspect of things won't be meaningful without the data. The things that we're teaching people of how to change, massage, form data to make this stuff work is only relevant for the stuff that works if they know how to do that. And it only makes sense because it's the data that they're familiar with. So all of this to me is inextricably linked. If you want to move forward the conceptual first into the process, I'm all about that. That's how I start all my stuff now, based on our podcast of conceptual, business, technical. I want you to understand all the concepts. Maybe that's where I want to introduce you different ways of visualization, but it's still very relevant to the business data that you're familiar with, because we're going to talk about these concepts a lot in the next several steps, right? I'm going to lock you guys in. We're going to talk conceptually about the different ways we can visualize stuff. We're going to probably lock on these three, right? Let's go talk about data. What is the specific business logic that we need to apply to this thing? Okay. Why do we need that data? we need this because this is going to be the x-axis flip back over to one of these three visuals that we've chosen. All of this is interlinked. You don't teach one without the other, from my perspective, because you're going to lose the audience the same way you would if you just spent weeks and months teaching them about visualization techniques, because they're going to be like, how does that apply to me?
I think in here, Tommy, too, like, it's, again, it's a lot of like, if you are in, to your point, Seth, earlier, like, I'm going to kind of circle back maybe a couple points here. Seth, you made a point around when you go to the conference, after they ask you for the slides, after they ask you, was this recorded and can they watch it later? Then they ask you for, hey, I have this specific problem.
Can I show you something can on I my computer?
Yes. We've spent much time after conferences, after sessions, looking at other people's machines and saying, can we take a look at their stuff? And so, to use that as an analogy, like, so I agree with that, but you know, this is where, I do find, again, there is these short-term challenges people can't get their head around to solve something. And that is indicative of, if once you solve those problems, we'll have some space to think about the bigger or the next solution. So, you know, I can't automate this process. I spend so much time doing the same thing all the time over and over again. Well, maybe we should figure out or work with them to say, let me show you there's a better way to automate. And I definitely had a number of, you know, teams that I've been working with that have taken that. Like, we just worked on, let's just automate what you're doing. Let's just get this out of this place here. Let's build a better warehouse. Let's build some better engineering of data upstream of you. That way, when you get it, it's kind of in a shape and ready to go, a little bit more easier to consume. So in that regard, by doing some of these, to your point, Tommy, like doing some of these low-hanging fruits, yeah, solving those problems, the culture starts with everyone, right? And someone's coming in and trying to, maybe it's the idea of like, hey, we have a large bucket and I'm going to pour a little bit of water in it. And I'm just one person pouring into it. And so the analogy here, Tommy, if you're the Tommy and you're coming in, it's like, I have all this great stuff we can do these great KPIs. Yeah. You're excited, you're coming in, but you're only a small, you know, coffee cup pouring into this large, you know, 5-gallon bucket. Yes, you'll make an improvement, but the improvement's not very much. Only when you are able to garnish other people's excitement and start getting everyone to invest and pour in, then does things start getting filled up. I mean, you need more than one just source of investment to really move, I think, the culture of an organization or a department. That's going to take more than just one person. So we prove it with what we're doing. We make a case around why this was valuable. And then from there, you start seeing the dominoes fall. You start seeing people invest in themselves. And then they start seeing, oh yeah, I could see how this could be very beneficial. And from there, now you've got their ear. And instead, the conversation moves away from, again, Seth, what you said at the end of the conference, help me solve this problem, to, I'd like to have more of a strategic conversation. Like, what can we do with Power BI? What is the art of the possible? What should I be thinking about? And then they start trusting you and asking bigger questions around, look, I have these reports and we're not getting much usage on them. How do we fix that and provide better support for these kind of reports?
I really like that. And quick PSA, if you attend one of my trainings and the first question you ask after is it recorded? I'm thinking bad thoughts. So please start with a better question. So
I'm going to always ask that. I'm going to put my hand up on every session that I'm in and Tommy's and be like,
no, it's,
is this recorded? Can I get the slides?
And I hate that so much.
Why? Why? Really?
Oh, no. We'll offline. We'll talk about that offline. I don't want to.
I would just, before we talk about it offline, I would just say more often than not, I've found it's not because people weren't paying attention. It's because the volume of information was so great and it was valuable to them that they want to go back.
Yeah.
And listen to you again, Tommy, over and over again.
Yep. Yeah.
Just side cut. Okay.
So, I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, if it was anything like me, it was just waking up like, oh crap, it's over. But Mike, I think, and this will be my diplomatic ending here, Mike, I this might be its own topic too. Well, you're talking about the quick wins. I think that's maybe one of the more underrated or understated features of our adoption, where that is, and I use this word a bit, but either the game changer or really catalyst towards getting over that hump or getting over that hill is we talk about quick wins. We haven't focused on, I think, how powerful they can be. And I think to your point, just doing a few of them, we don't have to boil the ocean or solve everything, but just doing a few of those can really be a catalyst of people going, oh, this is great. And to your point, Seth, again, me being diplomatic here and, you know, understanding, it's like, oh, now I'm invested in this. Now this relates to me.
Yes. And I can't tell you the number of projects. We always need projects where people have skin in the game. Like there needs to be ownership without someone else being able to say ownership and have some ownership in things. We've been in teams before. It's no fun when the team you're producing data for has no skin in the game. And all they just say is, you're the BI guy. You produced me this report. This is what I want. Please just make me more tables. Please make me more pages and give it to me. And so what is happening is they're trying to convey to you their need. You're building something that you think is functional and you're giving it back to them. And they use it and there's no usage. It's like used for a week. Yeah. And then they're like, yep, answers my question and move on. And now they're on to another request to you. And this is why I think the self-service mantra right now is so exciting to companies, because they're like, why should we continue investing in a central team that does all the data? We have tools that we can just give the data to the people and let them figure their own problems out. So like, you want to spend half a day working on a problem and then throw it away the report next week? Sure. Beat yourself up. Go do it. If it adds value to your business and you can say you can get your job done, fine, do it.
Yeah.
And they're not strategically thinking about everything. Sorry,
Seth. I'm surprised to hear you say that quick wins thing, because like that is the only way I engage with the business. We're always first with any new thing. What's the quick win? Because I can give you an insight 10 times faster than I'm going to build something really large on the back end. But that's where my mind is. That's my job as the BI guy to like have a, I'm going to give you value. And then we're also going to keep working on this in the back end.
Continually working to closing that gap.
Right. Yeah. My closing thoughts about this. I do really like that you're calling this out. And I 100% believe that this should be part of the process. How we visualize data is a key success factor in engagement and usefulness of a report. I think the thing that comes out of this in terms of like the adoption roadmap and where it's still in that project realm, but I think calling out that we should take time to lean into the different types of visualization to communicate and talk about the different choices we have and why, and maybe, you know, eventually introduce new ways to see data that these people are not familiar with, is very worthwhile and should be in part of this engagement with the business, because over time, the value for everybody, I think, goes up in engagements with them, as well as when they think about their own data and how to build things that are useful for themselves.
Yeah. My last thought is, I think we talk about, can you talk about your data? But the other question and the other thing we want to build is, can you talk Power BI? Just like we're skilled in other applications. Hey, CC me. We all know what that means. Why can't that be the case in Power BI? When we're talking about drill through, hey, can you work on that app for me? The lingo around Power BI is just as important as the lingo around your own business data. Because the better the organization can talk Power BI, the better they're going to ask you for the right value. And the better they're going to ask you for the right thing. Now, I'm going to go with Seth here. To a degree, from a realistic point of view, yeah, it's going to go with what's relevant to them and if they have skin in the game. So this is something I'm going to be focusing on more, and how can I implement this more with my clients earlier in the stage, or talking about this more, pushing for this more, the ability to talk Power BI.
Yeah, I like that. I think my key takeaway from here is, healthy data culture is a thing. I think focusing on quick wins helps everyone get trust, and then you build from there. It's not a one and done type thing. This is a continual growth. This is a continual effort, and you're investing in it. And again, I feel like this is maybe this is just how I am personality wise. I enjoy investing into people and seeing that aha, that light bulb, that moment where they click in like, oh, that's cool. Or, oh, I didn't know I could do that. And so for me, it's a lot of those, you know, I like and really enjoy providing those quick wins to people so we can start saying, okay, now we start understanding what's going on. Now we start seeing how to build things and create stuff. So I'm going to continue taking away that effort and try to continue to push into those quick wins, helping companies deliver things fast so they can gain trust. Then we have the voice to be able to communicate broader expertise around data quality and visualizations. Awesome. With that, we just thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you listening to us for this episode. We hope you enjoyed this. And if nothing else, we hope it gave us some more things for you to think about with your data visualizations and how to work that inside your company's data culture. Hopefully that'll help. And then also maybe how that works for Power BI. Focus on some more of those quick wins to deliver to people how to gain their trust and then work with them on bigger projects. With that, we only ask that you share the podcast with somebody else. Just let somebody else know you found it valuable. Share it on LinkedIn, social media, whatever that is. We really appreciate that. We feel like that's the way to get the word out there for other people to get engaged and find more about our community. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. Do you have a question, an idea, or a topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode? Head over to PowerBI Tips/podcast, leave your name and a great question. Finally, join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central, and join the conversation on all of Power BI Tips social media channels.
Awesome. Thank you all very much, and we'll see you next time.